This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars Episode 47 was recorded on August 19th, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. Forest for the Trees founder Luke Grohman is back with us again this week. Luke, what's caught your attention recently?
Hi, Eric. Thanks for having me back on. You know, back in our interview on Macro Voices All-Stars on May 28th, we said the following. Quote, a good friend of mine said recently he thinks it's possible that both stocks and bonds have it right with low yields and high valuations, and that it's the FX markets and specifically the dollar that might have it wrong. And given what's transpired in the past few weeks, I'm inclined to think that's right, because with Fed funds rates over interest on excess reserves, or IOER, which is an esoteric money market plumbing issue, is in short suggesting the Fed is losing control of the price of money in the U.S., which of course should not happen. Fed funds went above IOER on March 20th of 2019 and has stayed there. We went on to say the only ways to fix this are to supply more dollar liquidity soon, either swap lines, rate cuts, more QE. And this is not well understood. What is really not well understood is the underlying core issue causing this, which was rising U.S. government deficits are increasingly crowding out the U.S. private sector, because deficits are structurally rising while foreign central banks aren't buying treasuries and foreign private sector investors are effectively being paid not to buy treasuries by prohibitively high FX hedging costs. Fed funds over IOER is a real-time indicator the U.S. is heading toward a fiscal crisis. We went on to say then, ironically, from a purely mechanical standpoint, for as long as Fed funds remains above IOER, all else equal, it's bullish for the dollar and bearish for risk assets, broadly speaking, because it's a sign that the U.S. government is creating a worsening dollar shortage within the U.S.'s own banking system to go along with the euro-dollar shortage globally that Jeff Snyder has continued to highlight in his great work. And critically, Fed funds over IOER will only be dollar positive and risk asset negative for as long as the Fed's willing to lose control of the price of money in the U.S. Personally, I don't think they're going to be willing to lose control of the price of money in the U.S. for very long, however. So then we get into a reflexive question. If everyone thinks the Fed won't be willing to lose control of the price of money in the U.S., then what is mechanically a dollar positive should reflexively begin to drive positioning the other way in expectation of a weak dollar as the Fed is forced to inject dollar liquidity in effect to fund the U.S. government's deficits. This then sets up an interesting dynamic, because in most countries, a fiscal crisis is negative for risk assets, but in the U.S., that will only be the case if the U.S. decides to permanently lose control of the price of money. Given that controlling the price of money in the U.S. is the Fed's primary reason for existence, we do not think they're going to decide to lose control of that price of money, and if that's the case, then it's hard for me to get too excited about the dollar from this point. The Fed is going to be forced to cede control over the quantity of money in order to control the price of money. Basically, in order to regain control of the price of money or rates, the Fed is going to be forced to begin growing its balance sheet again much sooner than most think, and likely permanently. So we said all that on May 28th. And then back in our interview on Macro Voices All-Stars on July 8th, we said the following. There are just so few people openly discussing these U.S. fiscal dynamics and how they're manifesting in the markets today, even as Fed funds over IOER is effectively a T-whistle warning that the problems are acute and they're here today. I think we are rapidly coming to a critical moment in markets, so I don't think we're going to have to wait long until I'm proven right or very wrong. If I'm wrong and the dollar spikes and risk assets collapse, I don't think it will last for more than a couple months until the Fed is forced to renew QE in what will likely be truly face-peeling monthly amounts. I mean, I can get the $200 to $300 billion per month without really breaking a sweat in our model. With that context, I think there are three most likely paths from here. Number one, the Fed needs to cut rates badly. And to be clear, if the Fed doesn't cut rates for some reason and keep cutting rates in ensuing meetings, it will likely be very bad for risk assets, especially emerging markets and commodities, while likely being very positive for the dollar, and we will be very wrong about our bullish call, at least for a couple months. Option two is that as the Fed rate cuts continue or progress, or if the Fed cuts rates by more than 50 basis points in July, remember we said this on July 8th, we think it will increasingly force a rethink amongst a quorum of market participants, which will likely lead to increased understanding that the Fed is effectively cutting rates to supply the U.S. private sector with the capital to finance U.S. government deficits. As more investors realize this, it will likely be very positive for risk assets and negative for the dollar, with emerging markets, gold, Bitcoin, and commodities likely doing well. Option three we laid out then was if the Fed delays rate cuts that the market has priced in and the U.S. government raises the debt ceiling, we could see a 4Q18 on steroids outcome in risk markets and FX markets as a bolus of Treasury bill issuance hits the market and the U.S. Treasury begins rebuilding cash balances, sucking massive quantities of dollars out of an already problematic dollar liquidity situation. We went on to say we are cognizant that it's possible that paths number one or number three play out in second half 19. However, our bet and our base case is that the Fed learned from 4Q18 and that markets are reflexive. So even if we do get a 4Q18-like sell-off, it is likely to be of even shorter duration than 4Q18, with the Fed likely quickly responding to any problems. This is intellectually offensive, but the unprecedented U.S. fiscal deficit situation will demand a quick Fed response. And as we noted before, the urgency of the U.S. fiscal situation remains poorly understood by most market participants. The bottom line is that if the Fed doesn't provide enough dollar liquidity fast enough, the resultant action will likely be very difficult to trade, like trying to trade 4Q18 and 1Q19, except possibly down faster and back up faster. Our bet remains that the Fed is pinned into a corner, especially now that Trump has continued to hammer them that they don't know what they're doing. If the Fed doesn't supply the needed dollar liquidity and markets tank, as they likely will if the Fed doesn't supply that liquidity, the Fed will only be making Trump's case for him that they don't know what they're doing. If the Fed supplies the liquidity and markets continue rising, then the Fed will be able to claim proficiency and Trump will get what he wants. Ultimately, since the political reality is that U.S. deficits are likely only going to grow structurally, our view is that at some point in the back half of this year, a quorum of investors are going to realize what's happening here, that the Fed is effectively being forced to finance U.S. government deficits and react accordingly at a time when positioning is overweight dollars and treasuries and underweight both risk assets and gold and Bitcoin per a variety of portfolio manager surveys on positioning we follow. So that we said all back on July 8th. And then to finish up, back on July 22nd, we said the following. Fed funds over IOER is a sign of lack of U.S. bank balance sheet capacity. This then begs the question, why is this happening? And if we look at what primary dealer holdings of treasuries began doing in 4Q18, the answer jumps off the page. In 4Q18, primary dealer holdings of treasuries rose at a $500 to $600 billion annual rate. In short, in 4Q18, the U.S. government was being financed in no small part by primary dealers. What this data suggests is that Fed funds isn't persisting above IOER because banks are afraid of something. Fed funds is persisting above IOER because the U.S. banking system is increasingly choking on U.S. federal deficits. Fed funds over IOER is a sign that the U.S. banking system and by extension the U.S. private sector is running out of balance sheet capacity to finance U.S. government deficits without help from the Fed. This is why so many analysts are confused about why the Fed's cutting rates when key recent economic data looks decent. It's not about the economy. It's about money markets demanding that the Fed begin helping the U.S. banking system finance the U.S. government, or for short, money markets demanding that the Fed begin helping finance U.S. government deficits. It seems highly unlikely to us that this dynamic will be risk asset deflationary. Why aren't more analysts focused on the U.S. fiscal problems being the driver of Fed funds over IOER and forcing Fed rate cuts, effectively financing U.S. government deficits? We've called this dynamic Voldemort in our work after the main villain in the Harry Potter books and movies. The reason we've called it that is because, like Voldemort, in the early part of the movies and books, everyone refers to him by he who must not be named for fear of summoning him back. Then, once he is actually back, he's at first only seen by Harry Potter and Dumbledore, two of the chief protagonists in the story, and nobody believes them that he is back. But eventually, he is seen by a small quorum of other people, and once just a small quorum of people see him, we go from virtually nobody believing that he's back to everyone knowing that he's back. I think we could see the same thing happening here. It's akin to 2004-05 when nobody believed that home prices could fall nationally. And then all of a sudden, everyone knew home prices were falling nationally.
Okay, Luke, this is really fascinating to me because I think a lot of our listeners are sort of hearing your message and Jeff Snyder's message and some of my messages about how stocks and bonds are just not agreeing and it can't be right. And it seems like we all disagree with one another, or at least in a lot of listeners' minds, that's true. I don't think it's true at all. I think that we're all really in violent agreement, but we're just looking at this problem from different sides. And it sounds like what you're saying here is that, yeah, you know, the stock market being at these very lofty levels, even as the bond yields are crashing, seems to be impossible, like they're giving conflicting signals. What you're saying is they're not giving conflicting signals. The conflicted signal is the U.S. dollar. And even though a lot of our listeners think that, you know, Jeff Snyder and you are maybe at odds with each other, you're really not. I think you're acknowledging that the pressure, the liquidity squeeze, which pressures the U.S. dollar higher, is very real. It's pushing the U.S. dollar higher. That's causing this apparent disparity between stocks and bonds. And you think what's going to happen next is that President Trump is not going to give up on his dissatisfaction with the dollar moving higher. If we see stock market start to crash or tip over, you think, from what, if I'm reading you correctly, you think that's a bear trap because everybody's going to say, look, the bond market was right. Stocks are catching down to bonds, if you will. That's the reason. And since the bond markets move so big, this must be the beginning of the big stock market crash. You're saying, no, wait a minute, that's a bear trap, because what's going to happen if that starts to happen, if stocks start to crash, is the dollar's going to go even higher, even harder, and President Trump is going to freak out even bigger time. And who knows what's possible then, but if he's successful, maybe through direct intervention in the FX market to suppress the value of the dollar, it creates a rebound in stocks, and it's the dollar that actually ends up taking the hit, not the stock market. Am I getting all of that straight?
Yeah, Eric, I think that's essentially it. And I think the context for all of that that's important to remember is that the U.S. stock market basically is the U.S. economy now. It's 155% of GDP. If you look at net capital gains plus taxable IRA distributions, those are around 200% of annual personal consumption expenditure growth, or PCE growth. And PCE is two-thirds of GDP. And so we saw this in 4Q18 and in early 1Q19, where we had this sharp sell-off. And immediately we started printing the worst consumer spending numbers in 60 years. And so I think ultimately, I think it's a bear trap because it's understood at the policy level that if stocks fall, the whole economy comes unhinged surprisingly rapidly. And so I think whether it's President Trump interjecting, or whether it's the Fed, or whether it's supranational authorities possibly, I just don't think that they're going to stand aside and let Rome burn, if you will.
Okay, so we've got some really good points so far, but they've all been based on kind of a summary of your past commentaries on previous interviews. Now it seems like things are playing out in many ways as you thought that they might. So what's got your attention now within this framework that we've just discussed?
Well, two things really. So first, as we noted in the decision tree we laid out on July 8th, the Fed did not cut enough, doing only 25 basis points. And then complicating this, a few weeks later, Treasury said it was going to issue a staggering $433 billion in between July and September alone, which would all serve to drain significant dollar liquidity out of an already tight dollar liquidity market. And as we noted on July 8th, risk asset markets did not like that, particularly the second, once that second portion, the massive issuance was announced. And so while we thought we were coming to a critical juncture on July 8th, I think we're pretty much there now. I think these next couple of months are go time, if you will. And, you know, the second thing that has grabbed our attention since the last time we spoke is that we are hearing more people beginning to talk about, quote unquote, Voldemort, you know, that the U.S. fiscal problems, that what's causing the dollar liquidity problems is ultimately driven by U.S. fiscal problems. And in particular, some in mainstream financial media have actually begun talking about Voldemort, of course, not using Voldemort, but talking about, you know, there was a great article last week that $1 trillion in deficits may force the Fed's hand on CNBC. So I don't think it's a quorum of investors yet talking about Voldemort. And I certainly don't think a quorum of investors realize the full implications of this yet. But the fact that a few are starting to talk about it, I think, is an important signpost on timing.
Okay, well, if investors don't understand the full implications, then let's give it to them right here on Macro Voices All-Stars. What are the full implications, and why do you think that so few people are really on the right page yet?
You know, the full implication, to be blunt, is that the Fed will soon have to renew QE permanently, effectively to finance U.S. deficits, or else we could very well see a 4Q18 risk-off, you know, on steroids, at which point the Fed would likely have to engage in what may be truly face-peeling amounts of QE. Like we said, we can get to $200 billion a month in QE without breaking a sweat in a plain vanilla recession. You'd take it to an 08 scenario, $300 to $400 billion a month in QE is not out of the equation. And so, you know, all of that, of course, is dependent on if central banks continue to not grow their treasury holdings, which they really aren't, and if the global private sector continues to not buy nearly enough treasuries, which FX-hedged treasury yields being as negative as they are, virtually assures will continue to be the case.
Okay, Luke. So what would happen? Let's say we had either a plain vanilla recession or an outright 2008-like crisis, and the Fed did not react quickly and aggressively like you think they will. Because it seems to me there's a big wild card here, which is the Fed and President Trump are not getting along very well. And that says to me, really, anything is possible if they get into a showdown. So what could things look like if they don't really react as aggressively and quickly as you think they should?
It's pretty scary, actually. The math is pretty straightforward because, you know, the U.S. fiscal situation is what it is, which, you know, 103% of U.S. tax receipts were spent on entitlements, defense, and interest expense alone as of last June 2018. And because the U.S. is so sensitive to financial asset price appreciation for its growth, remember, I just said equity market caps 155% of GDP and net cap gains plus taxable IRA distributions are 200% of annual consumer spending growth, and consumer spending is two-thirds of U.S. GDP. So if we had a plain vanilla recession or an 08-like crisis and the Fed stood aside, the U.S. government would quickly be forced to begin sporadically missing entitlement payments to baby boomers or U.S. Treasury coupon payments to investors or slashing military engagements around the world.
Okay, Luke, I love your thinking, but there's a conundrum in my mind, which is the things that you're saying about how, you know, a fiscal problem is the driver of all these issues. If that was true, how could we possibly be looking at the U.S. 10-year doing what it's doing, plumbing near all-time lows?
That's a great question, Eric. You know, I'll answer your question with a question. With 10-year Treasury yields falling rapidly toward all-time lows last week and risk off sharply in the last 2 weeks, why have a U.S. 10-year Treasury auction have a weak bid to cover 10 days ago? Why did a one-year Treasury auction last week have the worst bid to cover on records dating back to June of 2008? And why did a four-week auction last Thursday also post a weak bid to cover in the midst of a risk-off and in the midst of strong demand for Treasuries as manifested by the drop in yields?
Well, I don't know. That doesn't really make sense. But why do you think that bid to covers were so poor in risk-off with yields falling strongly?
I agree it doesn't make sense. And I don't really know why bid to covers were so poor in the last 2 weeks with this risk off, but it's very reminiscent of what happened last year in 4Q18 when we had that period of sharp risk off, but bid to covers on Treasury auctions were very consistently weak.
Do you have at least a theory for why this might be happening?
You know, I wouldn't go all the way to theory, but allow me to make a couple of observations about it. So first, in 4Q18, FX-hedged Treasury yields went negative right at the beginning of 4Q18. So foreign private sector bidders were effectively being paid not to buy Treasuries. And so in 4Q18, U.S. primary dealers bought Treasuries at a $500 to $600 billion annual rate, which crowded out risk markets as they bought Treasuries. And so you had this sell-off. We fast forward to today. We have FX hedged treasury yields near all-time lows. So the foreign private sector has never been paid more not to buy treasuries on a hedged basis than they are right now. Now, I mentioned before that primary dealers bought treasuries at this $500 to $600 billion annual rate in 4Q18, but I recently saw an interesting stat put out by Zoltan Pozsar at Credit Suisse. Did you know that JP Morgan, Citigroup, and Bank of America accounted for virtually all of the primary dealer buying of treasuries since 2Q18, which means those three banks effectively funded around 25% of U.S. deficits since 2Q18?
No, Luke, I didn't know that. And if we could get Zoltan Pozsar to accept our invitation for a feature interview on Macro Voices, I probably would have known that. But so far, no luck. If anybody in the audience knows Zoltan, please encourage him to accept our invitation.
So, you know, I didn't know it either until last week. Now, you know, let me ask you another question. Knowing what I just told you about JP Morgan, Citi, and Bank of America effectively funding around 25% of U.S. deficits since 2Q18, and then knowing that President Trump reportedly called the CEOs of three big banks last Wednesday when the Dow was down 800 points, would you care to take a guess which three big bank CEOs Trump reportedly called with the Dow down 800 points?
Let me guess, JP Morgan, Citi, and Bank of America?
You got it. Some coincidence, huh? Now, to be clear, I do not think JP Morgan, Citi, or Bank of America have problems at all. But what I do think is we may have just gotten a confirmation of sorts that Trump's aware of Voldemort, if you will, that U.S. deficits are crowding out the U.S. economy and U.S. risk assets.
Okay, so what do you think all of this means for markets and risk assets?
You know, if we were rapidly coming to a critical moment in markets back when we talked on July 8th, I think we're just about there now. I think the next couple of months are go time. The Fed's either going to supply needed liquidity or they're not going to. And markets are likely either going to take off or possibly collapse. You know, the data are weakening. The bond market appears to be betting that the world could very well end. And at any rate, with $17 trillion in negative nominal rate debt, the bond market is certainly betting that no government anywhere will ever agree to increase fiscal stimulus. Now, you know, in my career, I found historically that betting on the end of the world is a bad trade because if you're wrong, you lose money. And if you're right, it doesn't matter anyway, right? So, you know, in all seriousness, with nominal yields negative around the world, your bond market seems supremely confident that politicians won't call the bond market's bluff and begin to get paid to borrow, which to me seems like misplaced confidence. You know, human desires are infinite. Politicians' desires to get reelected are infinite. And we've got a bond market offering voters free stuff and politicians a free reelection. All they have to do is start borrowing. And so to me, it seems like a bad bet. I'm still bullish on risk assets because I think politicians will call bond markets bluff. And I think this is good for emerging markets and value names versus U.S. growth names. And I think this will, ironically, in the near term, possibly be negative for gold and Bitcoin just momentarily until market participants realize what's happening here, which is the beginning stages of permanent monetary financing of government deficits. Because from a practical standpoint, if real yields begin to rise, that's probably, you know, the folks that are in gold and Bitcoin as sort of this real yield trade will probably exit those positions. So, you know, to be clear, beyond the very short term, as the long end of the yield curve sells off, you know, I'm not changing my bullish stance on gold or Bitcoin as I feel that gold wins either way. If I'm wrong on risk and dollar liquidity injections, either via the Fed or via global governments never come, then risk assets are likely to have a calamitous second half of the year. And you know, treasuries may approach the 0% yields some people are looking for. We think gold would likely continue to have its strong run in that situation.
Well, it makes perfect sense. And as you say, if there's a impetus here for a little bit of a pullback in gold, we're kind of overdue for one after being up almost $200 in a couple of months. But I want to come back to the stock market before we close, because what you've said, if I can summarize it, is, look, one of two things has to happen here pretty darn soon, which is markets take off because the chariots come riding in. The Fed and Trump kiss and make up and somehow get on a policy path that is going to supply enough liquidity, more QE, something to keep this game going. Or we are in deep doo-doo really fast. And what you've said is be careful of the bear trap, because if the stock market starts to take a nosedive, a whole bunch of people are going to say, okay, this is it. And I think your perspective on this is it's going to feel like this is it only until there's an escalation of political pressure to do something about the ascent of the U.S. dollar. When they reverse the dollar, then it's going to reverse what the market does. So I get that logic, but I think you've also acknowledged the possibility that if they don't do something, if they can't seem to get along, and they don't do anything to supply liquidity or to reverse the direction of the dollar, that it really is the beginning of something really, really big to the downside. So what's the signal that you would watch for that would tell you, uh-oh, they're not going to fix the dollar. We really are in big 2008 size trouble here. What is it that gets you out of bear trap mode? What would cause you to change that view and say, uh-oh, this is the big one?
You know, it is a terrific question. It wouldn't just be the Fed and Trump, in my view, right? So, you know, the thing that's interesting about this time around, given how the dollars turned into basically, you know, a leg of a funding trade with what's going on elsewhere around the world, if the Germans come out and decide, you know what, we're gonna hit that bid in the Bund market, and we're gonna build ourselves a new army. Kick the Americans out, say, fine, you can leave. We're going to borrow at negative 65 basis points for 10 years, and we're going to rebuild the Wehrmacht, right? Then all of a sudden, you'd have the Bund market backing up, and that's a funding leg in theory, right? So you would have to sell dollars, buy euros to buy back the funding side of your trade. And that by itself could start sort of this liquidity injection somewhere, right? Because now the dollar is moving down. As the dollar moves down, that drives liquidity because everybody's short dollars. So everyone that was short dollars is suddenly not as short dollars. They're in a more liquid position. So the liquidity injection wouldn't necessarily need to come just from Trump and or from the Fed, although I suspect that's probably our primary source. But to answer your question directly, you know, it's one of these thoughts I've not given a whole lot of, you know, it's beyond I'll know it when I see it. But the challenge is that where we are is so dire that if they really stand aside and just let it go, if this is the big one, if we're going to, you know, have an 08 and they're not going to come riding to the rescue immediately, you're going to be looking at some very bad things from a supply chain perspective. I ultimately think I'm not sure it would even be tradable because, you know, we saw in 08, you weren't allowed to short banks, right? They came in with a short ban. In 2016, there was the discussion of suspending mark to market for energy names in the energy markets to avoid that liquidation. And so, you know, the challenging thing is, as we've seen in multiple times in the last 10 years, these changing of the rules unilaterally to kind of keep things whole. And so it strains credulity to me that, you know, the SEC approved money market fund gates in 2014. And Jim Rickards talked about in his book of that year, talking with BlackRock, that the U.S. government had already approached BlackRock about not being allowed to sell in the next crisis. And that's why I think, you know, it's to me, it strains credulity that they would just stand aside and let this thing feed on itself. More likely, they would gate money market funds. And so you'd have a record amount of dollars in money market funds today. Not allowed to leave. Thank you for playing. You would not be allowed to sell. You'd only be allowed to buy, potentially. And so now all of a sudden, you know, we will let your, you know, however many trillions are sitting in money market funds out 3 months from now after, you know, the dollar is down 10 or 15% and after gold is up 30 or 40% and after the S&P is up 30 or 40% and commodities are up some amount. And so that to me is why I acknowledge I'm taking that risk that they would just stand aside. When you factor in the political side of it, I just don't think that it's likely to be that big or enduring a risk before things start to get, you know, you're not going to care what your 401k is. You're going to care how many supplies you have in the closet and do you have access to clean water kind of stuff, right?
Well, Luke, I hope it doesn't come to that. And assuming that you're not in your bunker drinking that water, we look forward to getting you back on the show.
That won't happen.
Okay. We'll look forward to getting you back on the show for another update in a couple of weeks. Listeners, stay tuned to your Macro Voices feed this week. We've still got Dr. Pippa Malmgren coming up on All Stars. There won't be any Energy Week this week. We're giving our production staff a very well-deserved summer holiday. And we've got the special on the future of monetary policy. Part one airs on Thursday, featuring Danielle DiMartino Booth and Peter Bookfar. So all of that is coming up. Stay tuned to macrovoices.com and enjoy what's left of the rest of the summer. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly Research Roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.